You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9. Good evening, my name is Sue and you're listening to Hear Me Roar, Joy's all females, like that's all like new, all female current affairs program, co-hosting with me tonight are the lovely Kathy and Lisa.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Got your words together. I just lost the plot.
Get your vocabulary right, Sue, come on.
I'm sorry.
Snap to it.
I'm snapping. Okay, later on this hour, we're going to be talking to Lisa Beale, who's conducting research based on interviewing people who consider themselves part of the LGBT, the queer community anyway, about their experiences of home and what home plays in their lives. Now, her research was prompted by statistics indicating that young people were often made homeless or ejected from their family of origin due to their sexuality agenda, which is pretty tough knowing that, isn't it, that there's kids on the street simply because they're queer and home hasn't been accepting.
Mm-hmm. And home is where the heart is, but it's also your safe haven, as you just said before, and when you're talking to Bridget, you have to have a place where you feel comfortable and that's where you want to be and you feel loved and protected no matter where that is. And it'd be interesting to talk to Lisa about the different types of things that she's finding from people, what they consider home to be, whether it is with your family or with your extended gay friends or your gay family as opposed to
that's a good
traditional.
Because your home might be with your friends.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, sort of I basically didn't have any issues at home, but I did leave home early. But, yeah, the gay community is more a family, I think, than perhaps sometimes your normal mother-father siblings type arrangement.
Yeah, which is why we play We Are Family at every Mardi Gras and every gay event.
We are family. Ooh, we should have played that today.
I got all my sisters with me.
Well, that's our music component of the evening. What is happening in our world?
Well, we've got some interesting news happening this week. First of all, interesting, we've got the ex-gay movement coming down to Australia. A coalition of religious ministries are holding a conference in Melbourne this Saturday to teach troubled young gay men and lesbians how to overcome their unwanted homosexuality. Apparently you do this through finding Jesus.
Oh, good, eh?
The groups are operating as part of the Exodus Global Alliance, which states on its website that change is possible for the homosexual through the transforming power of Jesus Christ.
Hallelujah.
Gay rights activists are obviously quite horrified about this, and they're going to be staging a protest outside the conference as participants arrive, and that's happening at the factory in Mitcham on this Saturday from 10:40 a.m. Now, ex-gay movements has been a big issue in the US. They've had a lot of church groups over there, taking people in. I think there was a couple of years ago, there was the Ministry of, Mercy Ministries, I think, sponsored by Gloria Jeans, which is part of the Hillsong. She's just giving me a big horrified look.
I did.
Part of the founder of Hillsong was also the founder of Gloria Jeans, which is the tie-in. And they would take lesbians in as part of their rehabilitation for them for other problems, but mostly to cure them of their lesbianism.
Oh, cool. So you could get a latte and go straight. Could I have a chai latte with a straight twist thing?
Can I have a chai latte with that nice hairy man over there? Yeah. That'd be great.
It got me thinking about what else they could overcome then. If they can overcome unwanted homosexuality, I wonder whether they could actually stop baldness.
Oh, baldness,
diabetes,
ingrown hair,
yes,
possibly,
tear,
gambling addiction.
What about weight gain?
Yes.
Absolutely.
No,
hallelujah.
If you had the low-fat soy chai latte.
Oh, well, that would be all right then.
That's ridiculous.
It seems in this day and age, and I keep thinking that we live in such a modern liberal society that attitudes like this shouldn't really be around, but it just seems incomprehensible to me that some people out there believe that you can change your innate being by your belief in a higher power. Yes, I appreciate Christians and their beliefs, and I support them if that's what they want to do. I'd certainly, probably with the majority of all the gay population, in being quite horrified at the fact that they think they can change us by introducing Christ into our lives.
I know. Look, I'm all the power to the Christians who have Jesus in their lives, and that's what they feel is empowering for them. That's terrific. But homosexuality is not something that needs curing.
No.
And it's certainly not unwanted homosexuality. It's just stupid.
Well, the underlying assumption there is that we are evil and we are diseased and we need to be, you know, cleansed.
So pop down your Gloria jeans and have a try. Yeah.
So if anyone wants to join the protest, they can do so. It's called The Factory. It's on Simla Street in Mitcham this Saturday from 10:40 a.m. And I think there's a Joy contingent going down there. Doug Pollard's going down there. And there'll be a whole lot of other activists waving banners and shouting at these ex-gay ministers.
That should be a really interesting morning. Imagine.
That might be good
way
fun.
Way to spend a Saturday. Ditch the markets this weekend and join a protest.
Yeah, sounds good. Right. What's happening in marriage?
No, marriage is always on the boil, gay marriage. There's been a lot of surveys over the last couple of months among mainstream Australians to say whether they support gay marriage. But there's one that's been done by the University of Queensland, a study called Not So Private Lives, which has dispelled the myth that GLBTIQ couples don't want to get married. Because now we've been talking a lot about how, you know, this is an issue that divides the community and most people don't want to get married because it's a heterosexual, you know, a tradition, etc. However, this study says that nearly 80% believe marriage should be an option for same-sex couples in Australia. And the interesting thing is with this survey that the most common age group that supported gay marriage as their first choice for their recognition of their coupledom, I suppose, was those under 20, more than 65%.
Now, the stats are high, aren't they? And to me, it's not that they necessarily want to get married, not that anybody particularly wants to get married. I think the argument is you can't tell us we can't.
Yeah, basically.
So, you know, it's not about, for me, it's not about the heterosexist, there's the words again, heterosexist norm. Mm. It's about the option. Mm. Don't tell me I can't do something. That's what I'm angry about. Even if I don't want to get married in a gay relationship, you know, stuff you, I want the option to, and then I can say no.
It's a freedom of choice.
It is.
Yep. So these statistics also said that those in a de facto relationship, already living in a de facto, 55.4%, they would prefer marriage as their preferred federally recognised thing. And I think it basically comes down to what you're saying, that they would like the option to do that, whether they choose to or not. I mean, straight people, a lot of them don't get married these days. It's not the be-all and end-all. But anyway, these statistics have been forwarded to the Federal Senate Inquiry, which is currently going on into the Marriage Equality Amendment Bill 2009, which is introduced by the Greens. So that'll be interesting to see whether or not that has any effect.
I think we're chipping away. We just continue to chip away. It'd be great. Actually, the law does change and everyone goes, well, nah. Don't want to. Oh, that'd be fantastic.
And give marriage the two-fingered salute. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
We still will have the option, though.
That's
once
it.
Once they get around to it.
Yeah, that's it.
And that's it. Well, the more surveys that come out about this stuff, the better. And it's interesting that this is one of the first that's actually surveyed gay people and say what they want rather than what, you know, straight people want for us, which is kind of...
Do we have an opinion?
Yeah, apparently not.
Apparently
so.
Good.
And still on the topic of surveys, it appears that almost half of Australia believes that same-sex couples should be allowed to adopt. And support for same-sex adoption rights has risen by more than 10% in the past decade. And this is according to an annual Roy Morgan National Consumer Poll. This survey, completed by 50,000 people each year, which is quite substantial, asked people if they agree or disagree that homosexual couples should be allowed to adopt and whether they think homosexuality is immoral. Now, in 1999, 32% believed gay couples should adopt, and that's gone up now to 42.5%. So we're heading towards the halfway mark, which is quite nice.
Yeah, it's great. I guess it's on the agenda and people are talking about it and people know, oh, my sister, my friend, oh, I've got a work colleague, whatever. And so it's just there now.
Mm.
And it's not like it's weird or freakish or diseased.
No.
Well, I guess I get frustrated because we're allowed to foster children.
Yes.
And, you know, sort of these are children that have been through some hard times and what have you. And we're quite capable and quite okay to foster these children. But when it comes to adoption, no.
No good for you.
No good for me.
Well, I think most of the children that are eligible to be adopted, or available is not the right word, but who could be adopted, a lot of those aren't babies. They are children who have gone through broken homes or have you know, issues with their birth parents. So, you know, we are, as you say, Lisa, we are allowed to foster children, and some of that can be really long term. So if our homes are good enough for that, then you know, that should be good enough for adopting, in my
opinion.
Anyway.
But that's obvious, isn't it?
I think so.
Stupid people yet again. It's stupid so far. Find me something that I'm going to be happy about.
Well, look, on this, speaking of adoption, Elton John will not be able to adopt a 14-month-old Ukrainian child because the pop star is too old and he isn't traditionally married. Ukraine's Minister for Family Affairs said this over the weekend. Elton, who is he's 62, he and his hubby, David Furnish, toured a hospital for HIV-infected children in eastern Ukraine on Saturday as part of a charity project. And he said, somewhat off the cuff, I thought, that a HIV-infected boy named Lev had stolen their hearts and that they would like to adopt him. But Ukraine does not recognise gay marriage, and the age to adopt, the age limit is 45. So it makes you wonder, doesn't it, really? Madge can do it at 50 from a country like Malawi, which doesn't usually allow foreigners to adopt their children. And, of course, Angelina can adopt 50,000 children, but not a couple of gay boys.
It's a good point, and I actually hadn't thought about that. But it is true, isn't it? Is it an anti-gay boy thing?
Well, I wouldn't have thought Ukraine, as part of the former Soviet Union, would be a particularly friendly, gay-friendly place anyway. I mean, Elton does a lot of work for HIV and AIDS, so that's why he's in the country, to be doing some charity work for there and for those, you know, for that cause. And they kind of just got lumped with the boys. Lots of pretty pictures of them sitting, you know, with the kid and kissing him and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he is going to be offering that child. I mean, they're obviously orphans, and you know, with that disease that they've got, I mean, you know, what a wonderful life for the child. Otherwise, he's going to end up basically in that orphanage for the rest of his life or whatever. So they should really give him the opportunity. I mean, what's the alternative there?
Well, I guess you have age limits for a reason, though. You know, yeah. Elton could, you know, drop off at any moment, and there he's in a foreign country, you know, and high, you know, they're high profile people, so the kid will never have a normal life.
No.
Do you know what I mean? I don't know how...
Yeah.
I didn't think he was kind of serious about it anyway when I first saw him on the TV. I thought, oh yeah, we'd like to adopt. Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm.
But don't know how, he said. I don't know, but it does bring up that interesting argument about you have kids who are wanting a home, and then you have people who are offering home, regardless of age and sexuality and money and country and all that sort of stuff. And you have people who sincerely want to adopt, and then there's sort of all these barriers to stop it. That's kind of what's frustrating, I guess, in this article. Not the fact of, yes, he is 60, yes, he's, you know, he's aging a bit, and yes, he's a high profile and all those kinds of things, but I don't know, it just seems a bit sad.
It's funny, actually. We went to Beyonce the other night. This is totally out of the blue. But we saw Katie Holmes and Suri in the crowd, right? They had them in this sort of reserved area in front of the soundstage. And that kid was so photographed, like everyone, as soon as they recognised her, there were thousands, you know, like all these people gathering around taking photos of her. Like, that kid will never know a normal life.
No.
Will never know what it's not like to be out of the spotlight. So any child with Elton John would probably go through the same.
Yeah, I'd perhaps not want to be adopted by Elton John.
Well, you know.
Oh, he'd sing you to sleep pretty well.
Yes, he bore me to tears. I mean, look, I love Elton as a performer and stuff, but maybe the Ukraine were looking at the high profile of Angelina Jolie and Madonna and thinking, we're not touching that.
Yeah, well, they probably didn't, you know, they're not seduced by the money, I reckon. The money and the glamour.
I wonder whether, yeah, good point. Good evening. This is Hear Me Roar. My name is Sue, and co-hosting with me tonight are Kathy and Lisa. We're about to talk to Lisa Beal about her research, and we've got a text in saying, what is so good about normal? I wouldn't want to be anything but uniquely queer.
Well, excellent. And that's probably in response to our story on the ex-gay conference, for want of a better word, that's happening this Saturday at Mitcham. So.
Yeah.
And yes, of course, we love being uniquely queer. That's what we're all about here on Joy.
You don't want to go down and be cured then. So good for you. I'm really proud of you. Oh, another text just come through. Does love exist in the gay and lesbian community? Aha, yeah. I find that love is a very hard thing to find. People are so judgmental these days. They are, because we've had our hearts broken.
Well, it's interesting. Does love exist, and does it exist in the gay and lesbian community? Of course it does. We're all capable of loving each other, and we're all capable of getting married should the bloody laws change, and adopt children and do all those sort of good things.
Anyway. We want the choices. Don't care if we want to take them up. We want the choices. Mm. Thank you very much, Sydney. Now we're talking to Lisa Beal. She's conducting, she's developing her thesis based on interviewing people who consider themselves part of the queer community about their experiences of home and the role home plays in their lives. Her research was prompted by statistics indicating that young people are often made homeless or ejected from their family of origin due to their sexuality or gender. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you.
It's lovely having you here.
It's lovely being here. Sorry.
She's like, I don't like it. I won't go.
We need a little sign that says, hello. Speak now.
Speak now. I just looked at her. She's like, what are you doing?
Is the dentist ready to see me?
I want to know, what got you interested in this kind of research?
I'm absolutely fascinated by how queers live, how we make home, how we do what we do in what are really oppressive circumstances. So given the fact that we haven't had access to a whole lot of things, like adoption, like marriage, like supportive families when we come out, how do we go then about making our lives in relationship to home? So how do we do home?
So how do you define home? Is it home within your family or home as in how you create or how you forge ahead in your own life and how you set up? Is it your actual house or is it the people that you're with?
Home is different for different people, and that's the other thing. Home's almost as hard to pin down as what's GLBTIQQ. So they're the two things that actually fascinate me. What is it that people define as home? Mm-hmm. So for some people, it is a piece of jewellery that's been handed down to them from someone they love. For other people, it's a cat. It might be a pot plant. It could be a house. It could be a suburb. It could be, for some people, this radio station. So I've interviewed people and they have said, it is midsummer. That's when I feel at home. Oh. For other people, it's I'm transitioning from male to female. My skin is my home. My body is my home. For other people, it's their family of origin or it's the thing that they work towards. So it's something they haven't even achieved yet. Some people feel at home wherever they go, but I've found that a lot of queer people especially don't feel at home either in their own skins or in society. They don't feel they have a place, so they don't have a home.
So, Lisa, you're not necessarily talking about what I was visualising before I read what you have written so far, is that home was, you know, there you go, the TV set in the corner, dinner's being made. That's my perception of home. And I know you said that everybody's is different. But surely everybody comes from a home somewhere, a home like that, the Brady Bunch home, in a sense. There's a building, there's bedrooms, there's a kitchen. There may not be the lovely cook. What was her name?
Jan? No, there was the daughter.
The cook, I want a cook. What was her
Alice.
Name? I want Alice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alice.
But surely we all sort of come... Do people refer to that as part of their central
home? They do
home?
As a story, as part of the story. So for some people, especially I've found older queer people, that, you know, they're often ejected from the family home. So that home, that initial home, that place where we start from, is often one that they mourn the loss of. So... statistics in the States have come out saying that 27% of young people now are actually physically ejected from home. So they come out or they're found out and they're physically removed from the home. They're told, you know, get out. So home in that way is often a place of hostility. And it's also later on a place where identity work is done. So, you know, we make our homes as either replicas of what we've come from. So we want to have a marriage, for example, and we want to have, you know, what mum and dad had or what mum and mum had or whatever it is that we've come from, or we reject that family home. We don't want that violence or we don't want to feel those feelings of rejection that we felt at home.
I would imagine that must be quite difficult to be able to shake those kinds of traditions. It'd be like someone from, say, you know, a first or second generation family who's emigrated here to kind of shake the traditions of being Greek or being Italian or, you know, that kind of thing. If you're talking about people who've rebelled against what they know, which could be any manner of things, the way their mother makes cupcakes or, you know, the way that their parents interact or, you know, what time they have for dinner
That's fascinating. Like what we do, what rituals we take on that have been handed down to us. So for me, it's cups of tea. That, you know, was part of my family ritual with my parents. So I make cups of tea for everybody. I have to feed everyone. That's part of what home is for me. But I'm also conscious of the things that I don't want to do that are like the home where I came from as a child. So if you look at space as being gendered, so if you look at the family home as a gendered space, so traditionally woman, female, feminine in the kitchen, dad, shed, and the roles that go along with that. So one mows, it's usually the man who cooks mum. Well, you don't cook your mum, but mum cooks.
You know, at least I was on that point because I'm going to forget. It used to piss me off that I wasn't allowed. Let's just use the word allowed because it was, you know, like, you know, I'm the man, I'll do it. I couldn't mow because I came from a hetero relationship. I'm not now, thankfully. But I wasn't allowed to mow, and that used to piss me off.
You whippersnip woman.
I know. I got the edges.
Oh, yeah.
I got anything that I got a power tool, I was thankful for. And then I did mow one day, and I thought, oh, this is just suck. I don't like this anymore.
But it's that you couldn't do it. It was that you weren't allowed to do it.
I didn't want to interrupt, but I just had to tell you that.
And which is the things that we do are gendered. So what happens when two lesbians set up shop? What do they do?
Hell.
You just picked on a very important point, particularly for girls. If you've got two girls, whether they're living together or whether they're in a relationship, there is always a tendency for one to take on the men tasks, for one to be, you know, have the toolkit, one to do the whippersnippering, one to, you know, fix the freezer when the door doesn't shut properly, and for the other one to be more of a homemaker and cook and do that kind of stuff. Yes, there's probably some overlapping, but have you found that particularly, and also with gay male relationships, that one becomes more of a nurturer, the other one more of a hunter-gatherer?
I have found that people specialise in the things that they're good at. So unlike a lot of heterosexual relationships where things are just given, so you're the female, you do this, you're the male, you do this. With lesbians, for example, there's much more negotiation. So I'll eat your food, but if it's really shit, then you're going to wash up for the next 20 years of my life.
Right.
Because I'm a good cook, but I don't stand on things. So you will have to change the light bulbs.
Mm.
So there's a lot more dialogue. It's not just taken for granted. Mm. And that's the thing, is that home for most non-queers is taken for granted. If you ask people what home is, they will say, well, it's my mum and dad's house, and it's, you know, it is sitting on the couch on a Friday afternoon, getting ready for the footy, ordering the pizza in, blah, 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 which might be the same for queers. However, they take that stuff for granted that we can have access to that. So they take those safe spaces really, really for granted. So living in the suburbs, I've spoken to people who feel that home has to be fenced in. And they make home as a fortress against the world. So their queer home is really, really important because it's their little safe haven from the world.
Absolutely. I mean, you need a sanctuary. If you're feeling that people are against you, or you're having to be within the closet, let's say, that's the place, that's your zone where you can be whoever you are and just be free, I guess. And you're free from any harassment or homophobia. So absolutely.
And that, you know, comes back to, where do we live? Where do we choose? Why do we choose where we live? And, you know, it's getting better now, but traditionally, you know, there was the idea of the queer ghetto.
Mm.
So if you were from the country, you know, the first thing you did was, if you lived in New South Wales, you moved to Paddington and you hung out on Oxford Street.
Yep.
You know, and down here is similar. You know, where are the gay enclaves? Like, where are the queer enclaves? And people will point out certain pubs or certain parks or certain spaces within the city that are queered. So
I don't know if that's home, though, Lisa. I mean, I understand the perception of you feel at home in your own skin and all that sort of stuff. But I don't see, like, a pub as a home. I guess that's my perception. I see a pub as maybe a family, but whether I see that as a home.
Maybe that's more of a safe space.
Yeah. That's what you're saying. Yeah, it is. Home is where it's okay to be yourself. We've got that text just
which
come in.
Which is where the queer space comes in. So for some people, especially young people, if they're not at home in their family home, then, you know, hanging out at the Peel or waiting for midsummer does feel like home, because it is the only place where they feel safe and that they can be and express themselves in the way that they wish.
Are you finding, talking about suburbs and location for a moment, are you finding in your research that those you know, enclaves like Commercial Road, like, you know, the little pocket of gay bars that we have in the north, particularly for men, you know, Sharon, Collingwood, Fitzroy, that area, are you finding that's, or people aren't necessarily choosing to live there for certain reasons? Like, because there's a lot of lesbian mums that have got a quarter acre block and a picket fence in Coburg these days.
Yes.
Are you sort of finding that we're sort of spreading out a bit
more?
Yes,
for sure. We're everywhere. Like, we are everywhere. And that's a really positive, good thing. But it's really interesting to ask people, where did you come from originally, and why are you where you are now, and what's been your journey? So there's a lot of, you know, research has shown that there's a lot of in-migration to the cities.
Mm.
People, you know, dance around, do a few Mardi Gras, and then they want to settle down, so they move out either to other rural areas where they weren't from originally, because you can never go back, or they go to suburbs.
Mm.
So, and that there has been a real cultural shift, which is fascinating to see.
Mm.
Yeah, this is really interesting, Lisa. We're just going to go through a couple of texts. With my last relationship, I was the one in the kitchen. He spent most of the time in front of the mirror, but I had to chase away the spiders. Thanks, Grant. We all need to have a home to feel safe in, and I have found that it is very hard for gay lesbian people because of being hated and discriminated against. We also need to have equality. You're absolutely right. And just going back to our discussion before about being saved by Jesus, interestingly enough, the anti-gay ministry would claim their attendees don't want their homosexuality, yet it's them who are encouraging them not to want it as opposed to accepting it. From Grant.
And we're talking to Lisa Beale, who's doing some research for her PhD about home and how queer people make a home. Now, Lisa, we were talking just before about people moving from their family home. How do people go, or what is their journey essentially to make a queer home when they move, whenever they leave their home for some reason? Is it a matter of painting it rainbow colours and playing Katie Lang all day?
I think it's obviously different for different people. I have been to some Katie Lang affected households, however. But no, that's definitely, there's no one journey that people take. And I think the more accepted that queer people are, the more those journeys will actually be completely different from one another. So, you know, I wouldn't like to simplify and say this is the one journey. However, statistically, you know, the statistics do show queer young people have a really crappy time in general, and tend to be have trouble in terms of support, both from within the family home. So especially gay men they're usually ejected. They're usually the first that's ejected from the home, statistically. And young female lesbians have a real problem with school friends. So the social network often isn't there to support. So if you're looking at, you know, why is home such a terrible sort of horrible place for some people, it is, but it's not for everyone. And as some older people are saying to me, their family were actually quite supportive when they did come out, and hopefully that will continue to improve and increase. However, I am quite disappointed, and I've heard some really heartbreaking stories. And you know, I've just picked up the Southern Star today, and there are a few stories in there about rural youth suicide amongst same-sex attracted people, and, you know, that shouldn't be happening now. Like,
no, it shouldn't.
No, but how can that in rural areas, maybe there's some, you know, there is an assumption that attitudes aren't as progressive as the city. You mentioned before that people, if they're from the country, you know, the stereotype is for them to up move to Paddington or to come to, you know, South Yarra or wherever, and find a safer space where there are people like them. But you're right, it is quite heartbreaking to hear that those kinds of statistics. Is that something you come across in your research as well? People
yes.
have those feelings of
yes.
severe isolation and depression because
and
of their coming
I think
out?
That... you know, because we do tend to live in, you know, the urban world, most of us, that we surround ourselves with supportive people and people that think like us, and we often do forget just how hard it is to be different, to be othered, to be marginalised outside of those safe pockets that we live in.
Because in the city, we're going to work or school, and you can find one person who gives you that look, you know, the "hi, you're a lesbian" look, and you go, "Oh, hi," you know, and you have a little bit of a dialogue. Whereas, I guess, in the rural areas, you don't have that as much as, or the opportunity to interact with others, for instance, at uni or work. So it must be really tough. Lisa, I want to know why you focused on a queer global under the umbrella, right? Why didn't you actually focus in on one specific genre?
Partly because I wanted to include young people that were still questioning their identity and still doing that identity work, so, and playing around with who they are. So, for example, by using the word queer, I've got a whole lot of older people offended at me. You know, queer is still derogatory. You know, we're from the generation that queer was a terrible word. GLBTIQQ doesn't mean a lot to some people. And the actual pigeonholing. So a lot of bisexuals have said to me, you know, I'm bisexual in this context, or I'm, you know, a lesbian in this context. For example, I had a young lady say to me, can I be involved in the research? I'm really interested in the research, but I haven't had sex with a girl for a long, long time. Am I still a lesbian? Would I be lesbian enough for you?
Oh, wow.
So who are we? Like, how do we identify ourselves? So by using the you know, the queer is shorthand in a lot of ways, those questions in themselves are really interesting. They like are asking
you could,
me.
Yeah, you could take that whole thing as a thesis in itself. Yeah, trying to align yourself with one particular letter of the alphabet.
There is a lot of importance placed on which category you fall into. And in the gay community, I find like I rarely say I'm a lesbian. I just say I'm queer because I personally like that. I just like the word. I don't know what I don't dislike lesbian. But I get a lot of people say, well, why don't you just say you're a lesbian? And there are other lesbians who are very fierce about protecting their, you know, their category, I suppose. And rather than say, well, why don't you just say you're gay? And what does it matter? Do you know what I mean? But this whole idea of identity and how you see yourself has got to have a massive impact on how you create your home, how you live your life, and in terms of that broad spectrum of home that you were speaking about, even trans people calling their skin home, not necessarily it being a geographic place or a state or a house or whatever. It must be huge, that whole issue of identity.
And it is fascinating looking at how people do align themselves in terms of their identity for political purposes. So today, for example, I might be consider myself a lesbian if I'm looking at same-sex domestic violence issues, or I'm looking at same-sex marriage. But in other contexts, I would say, well, you know, I'm an Anglo-Saxon, or you know, I'm a fat lady, or something else. Like I've got a whole lot of identities that go into being me. Or I would say I'm bisexual if I'm having a relationship with a man.
Mm.
So, you know, who we are is context-based. So that the idea of queer kind of, you know, it's not such a good term politically because it's often seen as gay white man plus others, whereas lesbian is seen as the women.
Right.
So I can understand politically why people do go, yeah, but you're lesbian.
You're black. But it's interesting though, Midsummer, our annual festival, where you said people often feel at home in Midsummer, the festival has changed its moniker now to not being a GLBTIQQLXYZ community festival. It is a queer festival. And they did that last year just to simplify things and put things under one umbrella. And it was probably a fairly controversial move for some people. But no, I think, well, I personally love the term, so
love it.
Okay, what do you think?
Love it, absolutely. I'm sick of trying to align myself with a particular letter at a particular time. I believe sexuality can be fluid too. I don't think that you need to fall into one category. I think it helps others probably categorise us. Yes, you're a lesbian, or yes, you're whatever. And at the start, when I did come from a heterosexual relationship to being a lesbian or living the life of a lesbian, I found it great. Yeah, I have a kind of title. But now I'm like, I'm sick of the title. I don't want to be known as a lesbian. I want to be known as Sue. I want to be known as Sue the person rather than Sue, you know, the sex that I am. Lisa, we have to round off. This is such an interesting topic and I certainly want to read more. So if you can keep giving us information that we can add to our blog, that would be really helpful. Go on, Kathy.
Oh, I was going to say, can people still be involved in your research if they want to share their visions of home?
It's probably easier because my email address is my name, which is strange.
Okay.
If maybe I give you guys my email address and stuff to
go. Well, we can put it on the blog. That's right, and people can get involved because I imagine it's a confidential process.
Yes, it's completely confidential, and I take out all of the bits that could possibly identify you as a lesbian from Thornbury.
Oh, shame.
Queer shame. Woman, thank you, from Windsor.
Okay, well, these are some interesting thoughts for you, Lisa, to take away. Queer folk not only create new homes, we create new families with a group mother, protector, nurturer and shared surname. That's really lovely. And this person hates being called queer. There's nothing wrong with me. Yeah, there is nothing wrong with you. Absolutely.
Nope.
It's just kind of one word. If you could, maybe you could text us back in with an alternative word. I'd really like to know a word that kind of fits us all. I don't want to fit into one little letter. I'm more than a letter.
Yeah, queer is a different way of describing things. I personally think it's just more simplified. And I think of it as reclaiming the title.
Yeah.
It's like when we do our show That's So Gay on Channel 31, which is coming up. Big plug on October 5. But we reclaim the term That's So Gay, which has become a schoolyard bullying term. But for me, queer is that way too. So I'd be interested to see what other people think.
Thanks, you, Lisa. So
thanks so much, guys.
We look forward to reading the rest of your thesis. Good evening. This is Hear Me Roar. What an interesting subject that was, Kathy.
We have just gone nuts and everybody has really participated tonight, which is really great, talking about titles and what they feel is home, which is such a broad... I never realised how broad the whole idea of home could be, because for me I just thought, oh, we're talking about, you know, what you do in your house and, you know, whether you live with gay people, where you live, or, you know, who your gay family is and that kind of stuff. But think about, you know, people... home home being a trinket, like a hand-me-down, or, you know, or your own skin being your home was kind of an eye-opener for me.
It's really interesting. And we did get a... Sorry, my throat's gone again. And an email in saying, I'm sick of titles too. I'm a transgender, but I see myself as a gay man. I don't under any title, really. Yeah, I agree. I think we're so stuck on titles and where do you fit and what if you're a little bit this, like, you know, it's like a spectrum. And I just think it's just, I'm over it, really.
Well, you know, there's a new title that's come out where people call themselves genderqueer. It's the new one, the new addition to the growing GLBTI alphabet soup, which is... You know, that's fine. I don't have a problem with people identifying themselves in any particular way. I have a problem when you can't feel like you can say, this is, you know, who I am, or I'm just gay. Gay just doesn't cover it anymore, clearly. That's why we need all these extra bits, all these extra letters.
And you can't be, they say something like, oh, well, you're a lesbian, therefore you can't do this. That's kind of, you get boxed into a letter. So that's what shits me. Lisa?
Yeah, look, I identify with myself as just gay because I don't think, you know, that, well, for me it's just an encompassing title. But, yeah, I don't particularly like to be titled in a certain way. I think we all should just get over it. I don't, the whole, I mean, that genderqueer thing, it's like just another thing to remember. I mean, God help us.
Now, Caroline, you've joined us. You've actually been watching. You like to watch.
I do.
I like to watch. And what do you think? Have you got an opinion on the alphabet soup letter?
Absolutely. I'm always confused, pretty much. Yeah.
What it stands for.
You know what? Maybe that's it. Maybe it should be GLBTI. QC.
Yeah, and I'm always scared of leaving someone off the end. So yeah. I think it's, you know.
Or doing what I did and stuffed it up completely. This person is texting saying, I'm over at GLBTI. It's just absurd and part of the political correctness with our community. I agree with you, Antonio. I'm sick of it. Everybody's just smiling. I love this show because we just smile. We don't want to talk. We just want to smile. Carolyn, have you enjoyed the process of sitting in on Hear Me Roar?
Oh, it's fantastic. I think I can't understand how you can gain so much knowledge and be able to, you know, sprout about so many different issues all off the top while this is happening in the studio.
Oh, well, we're super women.
Absolutely.
We're super women. This is Hear Me Roar. Yeah. We've got a roar.
We're raw
meat.
And each week's plenty to learn too.
Oh, like, thank you very much. But with the soapbox and a microphone, we're set. We don't need anything else. Maybe a little bit of music. You've been listening to Hear Me Roar.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.